Today's Walking Dead rewatch special is sponsored by TrueCar. You know, there's something about TrueCar that a lot of people don't know. Using TrueCar can also help you buy a used car. In fact, there are over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. We're going to see Glenn pick up a pretty sweet used car in this episode, and you could be just like him driving around, playing the radio as loud as you want and attracting any walkers or gawkers or anybody who is looking at you in your new to you used car from TrueCar. Because of the TrueCar, you can see what other people are paying for the car that you want, and you can know what a fair price is and feel confident. And with TrueCar, you can connect to a local certified dealer of your choosing so you can enjoy a quick, easy car buying experience. That's why with TrueCar, you can easily find the new or used car that you want. There's over 13,000 TrueCar certified dealers and nationwide waiting to help you. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar.com to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. Season 1, Episode 2 of The Walking Dead is over and has been for quite some time, but we're just getting started on our Walking Dead Season 1 rewatch. And now, here are the two guys who are always known as White Meat. I'm Rob Sestrino. Here is Josh Wigler. Josh, how are you?
I'm only known as White Meat when I'm not known as pizza. Otherwise, you're totally accurate on that.
Yes, Josh, we're ready to go here as we get into the second episode ever of The Walking Dead. And we meet so many of our favorites along the way. We get to see Glenn. We heard his voice last week. Andrea, T-Dog, Merle.
How fantastic. Like, what an unexpected delight it was for me. And I hope the experience was similar for you, because it had been, you know, certainly we haven't talked about the character too much recently on the show. But I feel like I was really, really, really missing T-Dog and I didn't even know it.
Yeah.
You know, like it didn't occur to me just how much I had missed T-Dog from The Walking Dead until I got him here in Guts.
Are there a lot of people in 2017 that are getting the dog nickname? Is that sort of like of a time and a place?
T-Dog the Bounty Hunter?
Yeah. Like, could I call you J-Dog in 2017, yeah, or that
wouldn't
ship
be the
sale?
You wouldn't be the first to have called me J-Dog at some point in time, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I don't know that anyone's calling you R-Dog.
No.
That feels like it carries weird connotations.
Yeah. So, yeah, nobody's calling me. I think my brother goes by Cess-Dog sometimes.
Cess-Dog?
I want to say that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Why did Dog become popular? Did Randy Jackson make that, or like was Randy Jackson just part of it?
I think that, you know, dogs are man's best friend. So just like to get our two species closer together, we've just started to use dog as an interchangeable thing so that like the dogs feel more comfortable with us and we feel more comfortable with them.
I feel like that dog as a nickname, I'm trying to figure out exactly when that came to prominence. I think
Bob Dog was the first.
Bob Dog. I mean that Snoop Dogg really came to become a major public figure in American culture around 1992, and I wonder if that was just the jumping off point for that.
Dr. Dog. Yeah, I think that T-Dog, is not the first to carry the hyphen dog mantle, but he is one of the greats. He's one of the greats to have had such a burden cast upon his shoulders.
I know that Sean Connery popularized You're the Man Now,
Dog. You're the Man Now, Dog. Yes. Were you a You're the Man Now, Dog kind of guy when that was a big craze on the internet?
Yes. I was saying
the
YTMNDs?
Yes. Oh, they were so good.
Yeah. All right, Josh.
Very sad that that's gone. Yeah, let's stop talking about T-Dog until we really have a reason to do it.
Well, that's the beauty of this re-examination of The Walking Dead, that there's so many different things that we didn't get to talk about when these episodes were on before I even knew you. And now we can now go through all of that and do a thorough discussion on everything.
I don't feel like we've ever talked about T-Dog. I don't know that the word T-Dog has ever appeared on a Walking Dead podcast.
I'm sure it's
until
come up.
Now.
I don't think
maybe
we've
once
ever
or twice
really
sure.
discussed him at length. But think,
like double digits even? I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think it even cracked 10.
I'm sure that we did like T-Dog puns along the way.
Yeah, I'm sure that we did. But we are now like on, you know, what, like 4 or 5 minutes into this podcast. All we've talked about is T-Dog. We haven't even talked about the fact that like this is our first Glenn sighting in forever. Anyone who is just hopping into this podcast, this is a good opportunity to say, as we said last week on our first show of the season one rewatch, that we are talking about season one from the perspective of having seen all of Walking Dead through the midway point of season 7. So anything from that portion of the show, big portion of the show, is fair game to discuss here. If you have not watched the show that far, you should tune out now. That being said, it was really nice to see Glenn. I missed Glenn. I didn't realize how much I missed Glenn, and this is such a great episode, the first Glenn episode.
Yeah, this is really fun. I mean, the Stephen Yeun depiction of Glenn here, I do feel like is very far from where we will ultimately get with Glenn. I mean, he is but a kid here and sort of like a smart alecky, like a little bit of a rebel.
Yeah, I mean, we kept talking about baby Carl last week, but perhaps we should talk about baby Glenn. You know, the days when Glenn was but a youth, as you've said. He definitely does have more of a childlike quality to him. This is all the pre-Maggie days. You know, he's not quite a man yet, but one of these days he will grow up. But it's not today. He is, you know, he's very brash. He likes to do things on his own. He really gives everybody a pretty severe dressing down when he's like, you know, every time I come into Atlanta by myself, it's fine. The second I bring anybody with me, this is what happens. You guys screwed up, so you're going to have to listen to me now. Like, it does not feel like the Glenn you necessarily remember. That being said, I remember one of the big early, you know, proving grounds for Walking Dead for me. You know, Andrew Lincoln is great as Rick Grimes, maybe not necessarily the spitting image I had in my mind of Rick Grimes as a comic book fan. But Stephen Yeun brings Glenn to life perfectly from those early days of the comic books. And I remember feeling that so palpably when Guts first aired and when I first watched the show and when I first saw Stephen Yeun in a trailer. It was like, that dude's Glenn. And better than probably just about anybody else in the history of the show in terms of a marriage of actor and character from the comic book. I don't think that it's ever been better than Stephen Yeun and Glenn. And he pops right away. You know, definitely, like we said, a little different now than he gets later on in the show. But I think that he's still such a presence so immediately and brings such an energy to the show. Like when he's just like so enthusiastic about ripping that car down the highway and everything like that. There's just a joy to Glenn that I think, you know, maybe we lost a little bit along the way somewhere, but it's so great to see here in Guts.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about Stephen Yeun's background, but I believe that he came out of the world of improv comedy. And I feel like that his character certainly is a bit of comic relief here in the early goings. And we definitely lose that along the way as he becomes more of like the matinee idol Glenn and sort of like almost like another action hero. We definitely lose that lightness about the character.
I think that's something that we lose a bit along the way on Walking Dead just generally. I mean, we're talking about season 7 most of the time these days and how dark the show has gotten. Then you compare it to an episode like Guts, which is certainly dark in many, many respects. But then you have the scene of like, you know, Rick is very self-seriously talking about the body that he's about to hack up. I have the name written down somewhere. I'm sure we'll get to it. But, you know, he's like eulogizing this guy. And right before he's starting to hack him apart, Glenn goes, by the way, he was an organ donor. And then they just start donating his organs. Like there was a sense of humor to the show that I thought was, you know, maybe a little cheesy for some, maybe a little too, you know, just like a little too over the top for some people. But I thought was really, really great in revisiting it. Like I laughed in this episode in a way that I don't feel The Walking Dead has made me laugh a lot in recent times.
Okay, well, let's dive into talking about this episode. And of course, we're going to go all the way through it. If you haven't done a rewatch of the episode, I think you should be able to follow along, even if you watched it all the way back when in the first week of November 2010. Joshua, I don't think we mentioned last week that the premiere actually aired on Halloween 2010.
That's right. Yeah, I remember that. That was a big deal. I mean, Walking Dead always airs in October. That's always where it premieres. But it really, it was originally billed as a Halloween event. And that was cool. That was fun. And I think that there is sort of that classic horror movie quality, you know, certainly classic zombie movie quality that you get to the first season of The Walking Dead that you maybe don't get quite as much in even season two. I think that that's, we talked last week a little bit about the Frank Darabont influence. And I think that that's very much part of Frank Darabont's stamp on the show, is it does feel a little bit more like a direct homage to some of the George Romero stuff, especially in the walkers who, you know, continue demonstrating superpowers in the early going here of Walking Dead that I'm sure we're going to talk about in this podcast. But I think even that stuff is kind of winking homage to the classic horror movies. And I think that that goes right down to the Halloween premiere date as well. I think that they really, AMC wasn't just carving out something that could kind of be a cool pop culture blockbuster thing for their network and their slate, but I think also really carving out and capitalizing on their big Halloween franchises, you know, their big horror movie franchises that they roll out as movies across October, culminating in Walking Dead, I think was a really cool move for them.
Now, we spend some time here at the top of the episode at the survivors camp. Is that right? Is that the correct terminology for it?
Yeah, you know, they're the Atlanta crew. I don't know if there's like an official name for them, but they are. I always call it, you know, the trailer park is where they're hanging out.
Okay. So they're hanging out and we see some Dale on the lookout. But most of what we see in the beginning of this episode is Laurie off in the woods, seemingly wandering about aimlessly, and then Shane comes up and sort of like grabs her, and you think that something terrible is going to happen to her, and I guess depending on your point of view, something does or doesn't.
Well, it seems like they're both, you know, having a good time.
From
like,
Rick's point of view, though.
From Rick's point of view, it's not going to be great. And there's like the somber moment too, where, you know, there's the locket and it's, you know, got Rick's picture in it, and they both feel like it feels like they're both kind of like, yeah, that's a guy who existed once and is not currently around anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're just like having a moment with that, and then they're back into it. So that's, you know, building up some tension for the awkward inevitability that these parties are going to collide again. But did you notice that the shusher returned? That Shane was once again back in shushing mode?
I didn't really notice that. That's his thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He grabs her and his first thing he says is shh, shh, shh.
Yeah.
He loves it. He loves to shush.
Yeah, he doesn't want her to, you know, alert anybody. Well, I guess, or the walkers, but it seems like, a very dangerous place to, you know, go off for a tryst. You know, how many times have we seen a walker just come out of nowhere? And I wonder if this speaks to sort of the sensibility and the worldview of The Walking Dead at this time, because if this was some sort of like 80s slasher movie, Friday the 13th, people go off in the woods, have sex, those people are definitely dead. Walking Dead lets them live here. And actually, we may even see the conception of Little Ass Kicker here.
Oh my God. Do you think that this is the moment?
I think so. Well,
I think we could choose to believe that at least.
Yeah. I mean, we see this time and it's on screen. It has to be important. So I'm wondering, Josh, you know, we've talked about in 15 years when Walking Dead is heading into, you know, season 24 and Little Judith is the central figure on the show. I mean, have we ever had a TV show before where the main character we've seen them conceived on the show?
Nothing comes to mind immediately, but I would love if something comes to mind for anyone listening for them to let us know. TWD@postshowrecaps.com would be a great way to notify us. That's a really, really funny point that we are watching the birth of the conception,
the future main character
of the future main character of this franchise happens as Shane and Laurie are going boom boom in the forest with the walkers all around them. That's amazing.
Yeah,
it's a great idea. I love that idea.
Also, you know, Shane and Laurie, I mean, I don't know when the last time either of them got a shower. They just don't care.
They don't care. They're really going at it. You know, the stomach kisses, you know, all you needed was some animal crackers and it was going to be Armageddon all over again. The zombie Armageddon.
Yeah. And so Lori also is
T-Doggy. Oh, my God. It was all ridiculous. Very, very nasty stuff.
Yeah. T-Doggy. So. T-doggy. Lori is wearing a necklace,
style, bro,
which presumably is Rick's wedding band. And Shane's like, hey, take that off.
Yeah, get rid of that. Yeah, you know, enough of that. Yeah. You know, Shane's trying to move on. He's trying to make his life normal. He probably doesn't feel so good about what happened to Rick. We're going to come to find out this season, I think, that Shane had told Lori that Rick died. But we will see from Shane's perspective that Shane basically just had to like leave the hospital and leave Rick behind. So he kind of lies. Like, I mean, I think that Shane is able to comfortably assume that Rick is not going to survive his circumstances in the hospital. Little does he know that Negan is nearby and visiting the hospital every day to shave Rick and take care of him. But Shane, I think, can make the logical assumption that Rick is not going to be alive anymore. But technically, he does lie to Lori. So, you know, even in a scene like this, I think you are seeing some of the discomfort that Shane feels about the Rick of it all.
Yeah. And Lori yet still wears the necklace. So she's not totally, unless she's just doing it for show for Carl. But it seems like that she does still have feelings for Rick.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, clearly we found out that, you know, long before the apocalypse, even, you know, the last thing that Lori had ever said to Rick was like, sometimes I even wonder if you love us at all, or whatever it was that she said. So they left things on bad terms. Their marriage was on the rocks before Rick got shot, before the zombie apocalypse started and separated them. So to know that your husband is probably dead on top of that, and like the last thing that you guys had said to each other was very bitter and contentious, got to be feeling not so great about that, and got to be making you feel all sorts of weird stuff. So complicated emotions going on in the life of Lori Grimes right now.
Things are complicated. So complicated. Rick is on his way out of the tank. We saw at the end of the first episode, Glenn is on the walkie and like, hey, listen to me, dumbass. Let me get you out of here. And so he tells him the bad news is there's walkers everywhere, but he tells him also how his plan is going to be to escape. Forget about those guns. They're gone.
Yeah. The guns are gone. Don't worry about the guns. But thankfully, there's a Beretta in the tank, and there's also Chekhov's grenade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this grenade is going to not come in handy for a little while, but later on, we're going to be very thankful that Rick pocketed this thing.
Very thankful. So Rick is on the move away from the tank. It seemed like at the end of the last episode that there were a lot more walkers in play than there are. Rick just sort of like hops out of the tank. There's only like one or two in the immediate vicinity.
Well, I think that that's what Glenn is saying. Like, Glenn is, you know, obviously positioned from such a height that he can tell Rick exactly where to go. And we, you know, the zombies were after Rick, but they were also mobbing that horse. You know, that's actual fresh meat that's available to their jaws, and Rick has suddenly disappeared, and that's probably confusing to their, you know, not barely functional brains. So they are, you know, distracted by the horse. Some of them are still thinking about what's in the tank, but not many of them. And Glenn is basically saying, go this way. That road is much more clear than the other ones. So it's really good instructions from Glenn, really, that gets Rick out of here. Really great navigational skills from Glenn Ree.
Yeah, and one of the things I also noticed here, Josh, in this episode specifically, that we see a lot of walkers running, and yes, Rick is going to be trying to get away, and walkers are running after him. And I don't believe that we see that anymore in modern day Walking Dead.
You know, again, we started talking about this last week, and I think it's just fun to point all of this stuff out along the way, because I think we're going to see a decent amount of it. But the walkers really are very different in this first season of Walking Dead than I think that they even are in season two. You know, we had all of the examples that we pointed out in the premiere. In this episode, there's going to be a lot of running from some of these walkers. A walker is going to straight up hop a fence. Yeah. Certain point. Another one is going to use a cement brick to smash in a door. So the idea for what the walkers were capable of doing, you know, how advanced they could possibly be, was clearly different in this season than it became in future seasons. I would assume again that is a part of the breakup with Darabont.
Yeah. So that the next showrunner that comes in, you just feel like that they said, okay, we're changing things up. This is not working. Like, what is the evolution of how the Walkers move from a production standpoint?
I think that probably a big piece of it is that this is part of, you know, this is part of Frank Darabont's vision. I do think that a lot of the Walkers, I mean, you know, you don't think of the zombies in Dawn of the Dead as running a lot, though it's been a little bit since I've seen it. But a lot of like the aesthetic and the looks of the zombies in this first season of Walking Dead really, it really does remind me a lot of the Romero movies, where the zombies are much more recognizably human than you would think. And I think that those zombies, the zombies that we're seeing in season one, are also a lot more recognizably human than they are in later days. I think that Darabont, as a horror guy, was much more interested in that stuff than the show has become. And maybe that's a showrunner thing. Maybe that's a Robert Kirkman thing, who has always, you know, really intimated that Walking Dead, those set in a zombie apocalypse, is much more about the human danger, we are the Walking Dead kind of thing. And I think that one of the things that maybe the show has gotten away from is really the danger of the zombies, and not just the danger of the zombies, but the coolness of the idea of zombies and what you can do with walkers. And you have this supernatural ingredient on your show, and why not be really inventive and give that, you know, aspect of the show a little bit of character? And I think that, you know, we talked last week about ranking the walkers of The Walking Dead, the ones that were not characters beforehand, but were just zombies. I bet, like, I mean, already in this episode, like, I could just make a list across these first two, and I feel like I wouldn't need to go much further in the show. Like, there's so many identifiable walkers. There's, like, this one walker that is really lurking behind Glenn and Rick when they're covered in guts. Did you notice that guy who's just, like, really weirdly dead-staring Glenn down? There's another one that kind of almost looks like Maggie in one shot. So there's like a lot of really great recognizable zombies here. And I think that that was a Darabont touch. And I think that a lot of the Darabont ideas just left by virtue of the fact that that guy is gone. And clearly the show wanted to go in a different direction.
All right. So when Rick finally meets up with Glenn, he almost shoots him. He runs right into him. And so Glenn is still calling Rick a dumbass. He calls him Clint Eastwood also.
Yeah, Clint Eastwood. We come to find out that Rick, you know, just shooting up Atlanta wasn't so good for the rest of these people. So, like, maybe the dumbass is warranted because Rick is, you know, he's really not proving himself in his. It's a bad first impression from Rick Grimes for Glenn.
Now, Rick asks Glenn, why did you save me? Why did you do it? Glenn says that he hopes that somebody one day will be as dumb as to do something similar for him. Josh, do you feel like, does this debt ever get repaid to Glenn?
Time and time again, right? You know, that's one of the great things about the show, is, you know, the reliance on each other with this, you know, this core group of survivors and the family that they build. You know, they're, you know, the chosen family. They're forced together to work together, and they choose each other, and they fight alongside each other, and they save each other, and all of that good stuff. And it's certainly happened that Rick has saved Glenn. Just off the top of my head, Glenn getting kidnapped alongside Maggie at Woodbury, and Rick leading the rescue expedition to get them out of there. Or, you know, the time that Glenn is almost killed in Terminus, and Rick with, you know, Daryl and everybody, and Glenn, they all team up together and get themselves out of there. So I think so. And I think that by saving Rick, he saves the guy who is really going to be able to pull these people together. So ultimately, sure, Glenn gets his head smashed in, maybe because of something that Rick does, but his life is saved so many other times because of his association with Rick. So I think it's great. I think that that's cool. I think this is a good sort of planting of the flag of an idea of what the show is going to be about, that maybe it's a foolish, naive hope that if I'm ever up Schitt's Creek, someone's going to help me. And that ends up, you know, I think really bearing out across the show for many of these characters.
We meet a whole gang that Glenn is with, a couple of recognizable faces, a couple of not so recognizable faces. We start with Andrea, who seems the most angry. She says that basically you just got us all killed. Josh, in the comics, correct that Andrea is a love interest of Rick? Do I have that correct? So do you feel like that the seeds of that relationship were being sown here?
I do think so. And a couple things too, you know, not just that, not just this romance that's going to play out between Rick and Andrea in the comics that maybe they were already starting to angle at for the show. But also the fact that Andrea doesn't seem to know what the hell she's doing with a gun in this episode. And it's something that bears out across Andrea's arc. She takes an interest in shooting guns with Shane in season two, so to speak. She's a sharpshooter. That's what she's best known for in the comics, is she's the best shot in the group by a country mile. So for whatever reason, Andrea did not work out on the show. You know, Lori Holden, again, a Darabont regular. I wonder if it has something to do with that, with his departure, that she eventually is going to ask out of the show. No idea what the true behind the scenes story is on that. But you see her character on the show, like the same arc that she's going to follow in the comics is kind of broken up across a few different characters. Like Sasha is the sharpshooter of the group now, and Michonne is the person who's with Rick. So those are kind of like the two main traits that you really get out of Andrea moving forward that have been divided across two characters that are still alive on the show. Before we move away from Andrea, did you find it curious that when we're introduced to this group, in this very first episode that Glenn is ever in, we see two people bashing in the brains of a body with baseball bats? Do you find that odd at all?
No, I didn't even notice that. I didn't think of it.
How about that?
Yeah.
I wonder if that's an Easter egg, like a really early Easter egg, because Walking Dead 100, the comic book where Glenn gets killed, has not been released by the time that this is out. I think it's still a couple years away. But presumably, Robert Kirkman may have known that that's what he was going to be doing at some point. So it's like, hey, maybe you should have some people slugging some bodies with a baseball bat. That might pay off someday. So whether that was an intentional Easter egg or if that's just something that's kind of cool on reflection, either way, I thought that that was neat.
Do you feel like that the seeds of that potential showmance between Rick and Andrea are all through this first season, or do you think it's only here?
I think it's most heavily here. I think probably the more pressing business is to see if there's any sort of chemistry between Andrea and Dale, because that's actually a romance from the comic books as well. I know that sounds like a joke. It's not a joke. It's an iconic couple in the comics. Is Andrea and Dale are an item, and there's really no courtship that you see. They're just like straight up doing it by the time you catch up with these characters. Whoa. In the book. But the show, I guess the show decided it'd be too unrealistic for Dale and Andrea to get together. So they never went there, but you will see that Andrea's story is, I think, more often linked with Dale. Certainly more often linked with Dale than it is with Rick.
Were they a couple prior to the apocalypse?
No, I don't think so. I think that Andrea and Amy hook up with Dale's RV, and then Whoa. Andrea and Dale actually hook up.
Yeah, okay.
I believe is how that plays out.
All right. T-Dog, again, the other familiar face in the group. We've waxed poetically about the great T-Dog.
I love T-Dog. Irony Singleton, the great Irony Singleton as T-Dog. Doesn't T-Dog always look like he's in anguish? Like, every time you see like all of my memories of T-Dog are like he's just like in like great pain. Like either he's like really reeling from getting his ass kicked by Merle in this episode, or the emotional brutality of dropping the key that happens later in this episode. I also think about like when he cut open his arm in season two, mm-hmm. and he just looks like he's in anguish. And then certainly, of course, when we finally lose T-Dog in season three, lots of anguish there. I just always think of anguish with T-Dog.
Yeah, he's a bit of a pincushion. He's just like, you know, he's just there to have bad things happen to him.
Yeah, I think that there was an inevitability to T-Dog's eventual demise. I think that people were probably surprised that T-Dog survived as long as he did, that he made it even four episodes deep into season three was something of a surprise. Really, it's kind of surprising. You know, you mentioned earlier about like the horror movie trope would be Lori and Shane sneak off into the jungle and then they're going to get killed. They're going to get punished for having sex. Like, that's just the horror movie rules. You would think that at least one of these people on the rooftop here in Atlanta would be a true red shirt in this moment. And, you know, we lose Merle, kind of, you know, like, we're not going to see Merle again until I think we see him in the beginning of the next episode. And that'll be his last appearance on the show until season three. But he's still alive. Nobody gets killed here. And I thought that was surprising, too. Like, you would normally think that, like, T-Dog would go here or this Morales guy. But they all make it. Everyone gets out of here alive.
Well, I was going to ask you about these other two people. So you mentioned Morales.
Yes.
And who is he?
Do you have no memory of this guy?
I don't.
He's just one of the guys in the RV camp in the trailer park. He's part of this crew that came together. They're going to explain their story of how they survived in episode three. And he's just part of the squad. And if you don't remember how Morales leaves the show, then I'll let that lie, because we'll get to it at some point over the course of our season one rewatch. But I think it's such a rare thing for you, Rob, to have a character that you know nothing about right now on the show. So why not let that bear out a little bit more naturally? Me.
And then who's this woman?
Jackie. You've no recollection of Jackie?
No.
Nurse Jackie?
No.
Or City Planner Jackie?
City Planner Jackie. Yeah.
She's also part of the squad, also part of the trailer park crew. Clearly not around on the show anymore. And if you don't remember how that happens, I will also let that play out. Okay. But these are people who at least survived Guts. You know, they made it through this episode. And I think that was a bit of a surprise.
Right. Okay. Well, it has been going on 6.5 years since I've seen this. So that there
totally
are some
fine.
Things that have slipped. Okay. So yeah. We see now Merle is also on the roof and he's just like taking out the walkers with a sniper rifle. Later on, we will see that Rick takes away his drugs like he is coked up. But what was the timeline of events here? That Merle went with them and then he went up on the roof and then did coke and then started just like picking off walkers?
I don't know. Was it coke? I know that there's something about it may be.
I'm
maybe
over my head,
two.
Josh. I don't know what he's what Merle is taking.
Well, I know it might be an Easter egg in season two or maybe it's somewhere here. But there's going to be a blue meth sighting at some point early yes. on in Walking Dead as a nod to the famous Walter White product on Breaking Bad.
Well, there's a whole YouTube video that Breaking Bad and Walking Dead exist in the same universe, and that's right. One of the things that people point to. Also, the car that we're going to see in this episode is the same car that Walter White ends up buying for Walt Jr. at some point, and I think that Skyler says she needs to take it back to the guy Glenn from the dealership.
No, stop that.
I'm being serious.
Are you serious about that?
I am serious. There's a whole video.
For real?
Yeah, search for, you know, Walking Dead, Breaking Bad. There's a couple other things like that. Both AMC shows, I mean, that it could be probably, I don't think it's intentional from that's what it's supposed to be in canon, but I think there are a few things like that.
Just winks and nods, you know,
yeah.
Just being playful. Besides, we all know Glenn's a pizza delivery boy. He doesn't work at a car dealership.
That's right. That's right.
Get your facts right.
And
get
also, you know, Breaking Bad takes place in, you know, New Mexico. This is taking place in Atlanta. So, you know, kind of a ways away to be...
Right. Yeah. That being said, you just got me very excited about the possibilities of a Breaking Bad Fear the Walking Dead crossover.
Yeah. Or Better Call
Heisenberg
Saul
shows
Fear the Walking
up. Yeah.
Dead. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, if that happens, if we get
Chuck McGill on Fear the Walking Dead. Right.
Yeah. Jimmy McGill would be great there. All of it would be very good. Mike in The Walking Dead. Are you kidding me?
It's all happening.
All happening.
All right. So everybody is upset with Rick because he rang the dinner bell, but nobody seemingly is that mad at Merle for shooting off all of these shots on the roof.
Yeah. And also, Merle Dixon, this is uncomfortable stuff you're talking about here, Merle.
Right.
I forgot how just like straight up outright racist Merle is in this scene, especially is really is very toxic stuff he's saying here.
Yeah, no, he's really terrible. I mean, first off, he just kicks T-Dog's ass again.
Ass, just brutally anguish.
Poor T-Dog. He just is always taking a beating. Then
it spits on him. It's just, it's awful.
The N-word is being thrown about by Merle.
A hard drop of the N-word. It was really brutal. This is really, really, really awkward and just terrible to watch.
Yeah. And everybody is just beside themselves until Rick just, you know, hits Merle in the face with the butt of a shotgun.
Well, so Merle is asking the group, he's like, we're going to have a powwow and talk about who's in charge. I vote me. Anybody else? It's democracy time. And he's pointing a gun at all of these people and asking them to raise their hands to vote for him to be the leader. And like eventually, like they're kind of all like, all right, well, I'd rather not get shot. So yeah, let's raise our hands. But maybe you don't notice this. Jackie, the great Jackie, Rob, she raises her hand by giving at least a single bird, if not a double bird. Yeah. So in her short time on Walking Dead, Jackie is squeezing in a lot of personality.
Love Jackie. All right. So yes. Rick knocks out Merle and then he puts him under arrest. He chains him to a pipe up on the roof with his handcuffs. And Rick has a pretty epic speech that he gives to Merle. Says there's no N-words. There's no dumb white guys. There's just white meat and dark meat now.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know if the, I don't know if he's cleaned up the metaphor enough at this point. I think Merle is probably at that point being like, all right, now we're speaking the same language. Okay. You see things the way I do.
We're all zombie food.
Right. No, I think that this is actually a pretty good moment to establish who Rick Grimes is going to be for the entirety of the show, or at least who Rick is going to become eventually, because I don't think it is who he is necessarily for the entirety of the show, but certainly who he's going to be by season 7. He says, all I am anymore is a man looking for his wife and son. Anyone who gets in the way of that, they're going to lose. Clearly, you know, his wife is gone at this point, but Carl is still around and Little Ass Kicker is going to be here in the future as well. And I think that, you know, take out wife and son and, you know, toss in like my people. All I am anymore is a man like defending my people, and anyone who gets in the way of that, they're going to lose. That's the Rick Grimes doctrine introduced pretty early on in the show.
So we see now Merle is going to be stuck there up on the roof, and that's going to loom large here in these next couple episodes. But meanwhile, everybody's trying to figure out, how do we get out of here? We're sort of surrounded by walkers. There is a lot of talk about escaping through the sewer, which really ends up going nowhere, with all due respect to city planner Jackie.
Yeah, city planner Jackie's like, oh, the sewers would be great, but the sewers turn out to not be so nice, or turn out to me not so nice. That's where Glenn gives his spiel where he's like, every time I've come to Atlanta by myself, everything's been great. I bring you guys one time and all hell breaks loose. So I have to be in control of this situation. So he puts Rick and Andrea in charge of guarding the clothing store while he's going to choose Morales to come down with him in the sewers. And Jackie is going to be on standby at the top of the sewers. I'm not really sure exactly what Jackie's job is in all of this. I think that she got the best gig.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Although maybe Rick and Andrea did, because at least they get to go like shopping a little bit.
Yeah. And again, a little bit of the seeds of that romance going on here where they're looking at a necklace and then Andrea says, is this considered looting? And then Rick's like, oh, you can take it. She's like, no, there's a cop looking right at me.
It's like, I don't think the rules apply anymore.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it have been great if she had like taken the necklace at that point? It's like, I'm arresting you.
Yeah.
Just like instantly just arrests her.
I just asked you if you were a cop. That doesn't really work.
I was undercover.
Yes. Like, I need to call my lawyer, Saul. Okay. All right. So we now have an idea that gets floated about of, well, the walkers, how do they find people? They see people, they hear people, they smell people. So for the very first time in Walking Dead lore, Josh, we decide to take a walker, and now we are going to attempt to rub his guts all over us so that other walkers will think we are one of them.
Do you have it? Guts. And Glenn says, if bad ideas were an Olympic event, this would take the gold, which I think is wrong, as we will see that this is a great plan that they should have used multiple times over the course of The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
But also, this probably would be a great event on the show Guts.
To me, this is a hilarious scene that we're about to see, because we end up grabbing a corpse and somehow
the Wayne Dunlop, by the way, is his
name. Wayne Dunlop. And to sort of prepare for this operation, the entire Walking Dead gang has now all switched into lab coats. They have slipped into like boots. They have gloves and gas. Like, what?
Don't you love, like, it's not even the same mask that he was wearing when he was at Morgan's house back at the pilot, but he somehow has yet another one of those face masks, Rick.
It's like a cartoon where all of a sudden, like, okay, we're doctors, and now everybody put on your medical gear for this operation that we're about to do.
Yeah, McGory. I don't know. That's
what you want to call him.
Yeah. I guess McGrimey would be probably the better way to go.
Yeah, I think that works. Yeah. And so Rick gives a eulogy for our the late, great Wayne.
Yeah. He had $28 in his pocket and a picture of a pretty girl named Rachel. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if I ever find my family, I'm going to tell them about Wayne. I don't feel like Rick ever told anybody about Wayne.
Yeah. You know, the thing about Rick is that he has not been around here for too many. Like, this is like day three of the zombie apocalypse for Rick, and everybody else is a few weeks in. I read a review that Alan Sepinwall had written about this episode before we came on, and that he had brought up that point. I think it's a good one, that for everybody else, they've been dealing with this for some time now. But for Rick, he still has a bit more morality, I think, than the other characters on the show.
Morality dog. Sorry. Just how my brain is wired after, you know, 3+ years of podcasting with you on the regular.
Yeah,
that's just okay, where I'm at. Well, now.
It was all worth it for Morales T Dog.
Oh my God. But this is the great moment where, you know, Rick's about to start hacking poor Wayne apart, and Glenn goes, "One more thing, he was an organ donor," and then they just start ripping open his organs. It's so gross, but it's also really, really funny in its own way. And they're trying to think about other things to mask themselves from the stench and the smell and how gross it is, like puppies and kittens. And then classic T-Dog turns it into dead puppies and kittens.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why he had to go and do that, but that's just T-Dog spoiling the mood like he always does.
So the plan is going to be in place for Rick and for Glenn to sneak out wearing the guts. Also, Rick gives T-Dog the handcuff key to go get Merle out.
T-Dog, worst person ever to give that key to.
Yeah, the T-Dog really is going to screw up everything.
Yeah, if bad ideas were an Olympic event, giving T-Dog the key to Merle's handcuffs would take the gold.
Yeah, he's the Usain Bolt of bad ideas.
he's going to be responsible for that. And I don't think that this is going to help Merle's view of race relations anytime soon. I think it's only going to reinforce his terrible ideas.
Yeah, probably not. So Rick and Glenn begin their march to a construction site, which is nearby, where they feel like that if they can make enough noise over there, they can distract the walker so everybody can get away.
And apparently, is it Rick who says construction sites, the trucks, there's always keys on site? This is a good tip.
Yeah. Who knew?
You know, if that's true, if every construction site has keys on site, extra keys for the trucks, this is great knowledge to apply in any potential real apocalyptic situations.
Yeah.
Walking Dead will teach you a thing or two.
Yeah. Well, what do you need? Like a bulldozer?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. That could be fun to drive around.
It's slow to drive around.
It's a little slow, but like who's getting in the way of me just like mowing you down on a bulldozer, right?
I guess so. So we see, meanwhile, the group at the department store is trying to radio back, and they are able to pick up these signals at the camp. They make out, hey, we're at the department store. And that's enough for Shane. Leave him. They're done. They're done for.
Yeah, Shane's a bad leader. Or maybe not. I mean, Shane's trying to protect everybody, but his bedside manner leaves something to be desired. Maybe he really should just keep to the shushing, because when he tries to speak words, they're very unsympathetic. Amy is here, and she's upset because her sister Andrea is back in the department store shopping for mermaid necklaces for her. And Shane's like, yeah, we got to leave her. And Amy says, Andrea's my sister, you prick. And it doesn't go over well. And even Lori doesn't seem like she's especially psyched about Shane's choice. My memory's a little foggy on how episode 3 exactly is going to play out, but this is going to be one of the final impressions, at least if not the final impression, that Shane has on Lori before Rick comes back into her life.
Mm-hmm.
So that forest romp really was, maybe somebody did die there, Rob, and it was Shane as Lori's boyfriend. Maybe that was it.
Yeah.
That was their last happy time.
Okay. Well, it must have not been that great if this is going to be the deal breaker.
It didn't look great, just to be honest. Like, rushed, really rushed, needy, aggressive.
Okay.
Very handsy. Not great. That didn't seem great.
Yeah. All right.
And this is somebody who ranks Shane as the fourth best Walking Dead character of all time.
Yeah.
Talking here.
So, Rick and Glenn, they are moving very slow, and they're getting to where they need to go. They can't believe that this is going to work.
Yeah, and just like that, it's like every time my wife and I go out and visit my parents, and they live out on Long Island, and we have to drive back into the city, every single time without fail, my mom says, oh, don't worry, I'm sure traffic's going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And every time she says that, we just get clobbered by traffic. And so it feels like the second that you say out loud, everything's going to be great, the worst possible thing for that situation happens next.
Yeah.
And that is exactly what happens here. It is the curse coming true. Glenn says, this is working. And then suddenly it starts downpouring on them. And the rain washes away the guts. And actually throughout the episode, they're building to it. Like, you hear the rolling of thunder in the mm-hmm. distance throughout the episode. So that's really cool. Also worth mentioning, this episode directed by the incredible Michelle McLaren. So lots of little attention to detail like that littered throughout the episode.
Yeah. I know we've made a couple of comparisons to Breaking Bad so far. Michelle McLaren has directed a number of great Breaking Bad
theory
episodes.
Theory proved. Theory confirmed. Same universe.
Yeah, same universe. But what I really do like about this is that this feels to me like a very Breaking Bad type episode, where it's Walt and Jesse have a plan. It's a foolproof plan. It's a great plan. We see it executed to perfection 99% of the way there. And then some unforeseen thing comes along that completely ruins the plan before it's finally executed. And to me, I feel like just the pacing of that is something I always enjoyed on Breaking Bad, and I enjoy it here.
Yeah, I think so. I really do think that this is one of the great episodes of The Walking Dead. I think there's a lot of levity. There's some stuff here that does not play as well anymore, if it ever played well, but certainly didn't play well on the rewatch here. Like, a lot of the Merle stuff was just really bad to watch, I thought. But I think that there is a lot of playfulness in this episode. I think that you're right. I think sort of like this focused, this really intensely focused idea of, we just got to get ourselves out of a really bad situation. Let's do it in a creative way. That's executed just with a good amount of joy by the people who were making this show. Like, very clearly just an episode that must have been a delight to work on. And I think that really translates. I think the construction of the set pieces and the hatching of these harebrained schemes that we're going to see coming from Rick all across The Walking Dead, but really bearing out here in this episode, it's really fun to watch. And I think that makes this episode really stand out for me. I do think that this is one of the better Walking Dead episodes, for sure.
So as the rain is beginning to come down, Rick and Glenn just say, okay, just run for it. And now walkers are seeing what's up. The walkers are chasing them. Rick and Glenn hop a fence, and then the walkers are seemingly stopped by the fence. But there are some of the walkers, Josh, that are climbing a fence to come after them.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. You know, this is not going to fly in today's Walking Dead. And I think you just have to allow for the fact that this was a thing that happened in the first season in the show and does not seem possible anymore on the show. It's an idea that seems to have been completely abandoned. But it's kind of fun here. I almost wish that we hadn't gotten away from this stuff. Can you imagine just like the difficulty level of having to deal with everything that they have to deal with right now in the show anyway, trying to untangle handle the situation with the Saviors, and they would also have to deal with walkers that could climb fences, they wouldn't have been able to hang out in Alexandria for a day.
The jail. Yeah.
Yeah.
Would have been a problem. Would have been a major
big
problem.
Problem.
Yeah. And yeah. as you mentioned, you know, we see a walker like smashing a window with a brick also like repeatedly. Just like
so weird. Yeah.
It seems crazy that they can like use tools to help yeah. them.
Yeah. So I don't know, you know, how great that would be to like continue on the show. Maybe it is best left as just like a relic of the past. But as far as relics of the past go, this one's pretty great.
Yeah. So we end up with T-Dog, who is tasked with letting Merle out. He seems like he's up on the roof and he's getting a little panicky with everything that's going on. He's gathering up the tools and he falls down and we see a slow motion tracking shot of the handcuff key go down some open pipe and to be gone and never seen again.
How much of the season's budget went into that shot of the key just like perfectly dropping into the drain?
40%.
A lot. Yeah. Yeah, a good amount. I would say a decent amount of money was put into that. Do you think that was an accident on T-Dog's part? Or do you think, as the show will prove to us, because we will often see that T-Dog is a flawless human being, do you think that he just like, it was like a nothing but net shot where he was just like, ah, oh, sorry, Merle, I dropped the key?
No, it's a one in a million shot. He couldn't have yeah. gotten the key to fall down the hole if he wanted it to.
Certainly not without the force.
Yeah, I don't think
yeah.
so.
Yeah.
And so T-Dog just leaves Merle for dead.
Yo, on top of that, T-Dog like locks up the door to the roof, which I guess like the charitable read on that is like, I don't want the walkers to be able to get to the roof and get to Merle. But on the off chance that Merle is able to free himself from the handcuff, where's that dude going to go if you've locked the door? So, yeah, I mean, you know, he's probably going to roast in the sun and not survive. But like, what's the move there? Also, I guess walkers probably could unlock doors at this point in The Walking Dead. So maybe the locking of the door is just to screw with Merle.
Probably
further.
Pick the lock, too.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, T-Dog really just bungling it left and right here in this scene. And it's great.
How much intention do you ascribe to T-Dog?
Everything that T-Dog does is purely intentional.
Okay.
He's a very, very precise, specific, calculated, courageous, heroic, fantastic human being.
Wow.
I miss T-Dog.
In all seriousness, that we hear Merle say terrible things to T-Dog in this episode. And then later on, we see T-Dog do something pretty bad to Merle. I mean, is it a act of revenge?
I think that based on like him
not, I mean, he couldn't have, you know, gotten the key in the hole on purpose.
Right. Well, I mean, at that point, I think that it's just a matter of time. Like my ride's here, my Uber's here, gotta go, you know, like the car's here. So, you know, he kind of just has to go. He just has to leave. He can't spend the time like hacksawing Merle out of there and risk losing his ride out of this zombie horde to save Merle, of all people, the guy who just beat the shit out of him and called him all sorts of racist names. So I don't think that it's like necessarily intentional to, you know, out of vengeance or revenge or anything like that to leave Merle here. But he does put in the extra effort to bar the door, and it makes you wonder.
So meanwhile, we end up seeing Glenn getting into a beautiful hot red. What kind of car is that?
Oh, don't ask me.
Yeah.
Ask Skyler and Walter White.
Yeah. It looks like the kind of car that you would get at True Car to be able to locate a fine used vehicle like that one.
Indeed. I think that would be the way to identify that vehicle for sure.
Yeah. And so Glenn is going to get that siren going and just start driving around, and he's going to be like the Pied Piper of walkers.
Yeah, he's going to lead them all away with the car alarm still blaring, and he's just hooting and hollering his way down the highway. And I can't tell you like how great it was to see Glenn in a moment of pure joy in the middle of the zombie apocalypse in his very first episode of The Walking Dead, given how horribly that character got botched along the way toward the end. It was really, really cool and really, really nice to see that character in his prime. I think that they really did such a great job with Glenn in the early days of Walking Dead. And that moment where he's just so psyched to be on the highway is a really great moment. And just a great shot to have that iconic shot of Atlanta with the highway clogged up on one side that we saw Rick walking through on horseback in the first episode. And to sort of get the response to that call with Glenn just ripping his car down the highway in the opposite direction was really, really cool.
Yeah, I do think that at some point Glenn should turn the siren off to not lure all the zombies to the survivors' camp. I think that would be a good move.
That might be a good move. That might be a good move. Yeah. That might be something he regrets at a certain point.
And then Rick also is able to get everybody into the truck, and they are also able to escape and head out of Atlanta as well to rejoin the survivors camp. And Josh, that's where we're going next week.
Oh my God, to the survivors camp. I can't believe it. I thought that the survivors was happening later this year.
Yeah, later this year. Everybody's going to be one big reunion for the Grimes family coming up 1 week from now for us.
Yeah, so, you know, Rick had said to Andrea, if I can get us out of here alive, would that make up for being a dumbass earlier? And she said, no, it would be a start. So he's at least made a start. You know, he hasn't completely made up for his past sins, but he got everybody out of there safe, except for Merle. And he's going to have to answer that in episode 3, Rob, when we finally get to talk about the introduction of the man, Daryl Dixon.
The great Daryl Dixon. All right, so a lot to tease us with next week. As we continue our Walking Dead rewatch, Josh, is there any debate that the hashtag today needs to be Morales T-Dog?
None from me. I'm so sorry to put that in the universe, but
okay,
it's there. It's there.
That's wonderful. Josh, it's so much fun to go back and go through these episodes with you.
Yeah, no, this is great. This is already bearing on. I can't wait for next week. Tell It to the Frogs is the name of the episode.
Yeah.
We'll have to figure out why.
Yeah, we'll look into that. Of course, if you have any questions or thoughts about these episodes, you can always send us your feedback, twd@postshowrecaps.com. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say on postshowrecaps.com about this episode. Follow Josh Wigler on Twitter. He is @RoundHoward. I'm @RobSestrino. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.